Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Twice a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Neil Schaefer. Neil is a leading authority on helping innovative businesses through their digital transformation of sales and marketing through consulting, training, and development and execution of social media marketing strategy, influencer marketing, and social selling initiatives.
Hey, Ari, I'm really psyched to be here today.
Neil, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. You have a new book out, Age of Influence. You know, I'm excited to check it out. A lot of, you know, you come from an academic background and a lot of your research, a lot of your interests lie in, you know, influencer marketing, social strategy. You know, the topic of the conversation of today that I really wanted to get into is, you know, influencer marketing. And, you know, that's obviously the topic of your book. So you're sort of the perfect expert to talk about it. You know, let's start with a really big topic, I think, which is, you know, with your book, you know, what were some of the trends that you saw that have recently come out in the influencer marketing world that you think are really important for brands?
Yeah, I think that, you know, there's some brands that might think influencer marketing is a fad or maybe with coronavirus it'll go away, but that's definitely not the case, right? And I think it's because there's a few really, really important trends. Number one, that social media has become pay to play for businesses. I think in the most part, we can say that. And when I work with my clients, we look at organic and paid social media as one, and the cost of that being the cost of those advertisements, right? And then what's the ROI? The second is we know that people distrust more and more advertisements. So as social media becomes pay to play, companies tend to do what they traditionally have always done, which is go to the advertising model, paid media, paid social. And people, you know, some of those ads might be somewhat effective, but they're advertisements, which a lot of people will have less and less trust in. And we also have to remember that the algorithms are favoring people, right? And they're not favoring businesses because it's pay to play. So, you know, those ads are never going to go viral on social media. And the whole idea about social media for businesses back in the day when companies were forwarding their domain to their Facebook page because it's got so much viral engagement is social media is all about word of mouth. It's all about inciting word of mouth from people who other people trust, who other people find to be relatable or real. And you can't do that through advertising. So I believe today, and then you throw in the whole challenges of visual social, you throw in the challenges of Instagram from a photo perspective or YouTube from a video perspective. And then you have stories, then you have reels, and obviously TikTok and a musical feature to it as well. It becomes really, really challenging for brands to be able to create that kind of content because they're used to creating visual content that are advertisements, that are, you know, stock photos based around products. So it's a totally different mindset. So it's all these things that are really shifting a lot of businesses to work more and more with more and more content creators who are influencers. And I'll also say, it's not just Instagram, it's not just TikTok and YouTube. You know, I recently did a campaign with FedEx on LinkedIn. It's blogs, it's podcasts. It goes across all the different social networks and all the different content mediums. And it's really, you know, if social media is about inciting word of mouth, as I said, it's really hard to do on your own. But when you collaborate with others, when you collaborate with other content creators who have communities that you want to tap into, it becomes very, very powerful for a variety of reasons.
So one of the things that I've sort of noticed on the influencer marketing side is, you know, we've seen all these people running affiliate ads. Do you think users are becoming, you know, think it's disingenuous, right? Where they see through it now because, you know, your point about paid social, we see through the brands and sort of their advertisements. But I feel like that's happening the same with influencer marketing where we see these ads from influencers and we're like, do they really believe in this or are they just getting a big check and they're telling us to buy it?
Well, just like there are good ads, there's bad ads, there's good content, there's bad content, there's good influencers and there's bad influencers. And it's really up to the brand to make sure that they work with the right influencers because if every day of the week they're promoting a different competing product, then yes, people lose trust in them. And that's the idea is that they've built these communities based on trust. So even if they do promote a product, as long as they're not promoting a product all the time, and the product they promote is aligned with all the other content they've been publishing, and the way they describe it resonates with their audience, it's completely believable. It's only when they don't do that, that it hurts them in many ways, right? You know, the post is not going to perform well, and the influencer is going to lose trust in their community. And that's all that influencer has, right? If they lose that trust, they lose their influence. So I believe that the good influencers are very, very aware of that. But you also have to remember that these days, when we talk about influencers, we're not just talking about you know, Kardashian types. We're talking about nano influencers with, you know, a few thousand followers who aren't doing those sorts of things that the media associate influencers doing, right? I look at influencers, I talk to brands about employee advocacy, right? Leveraging employees as influencers, or tapping into your customer base, or looking at who's following you on social media and finding the nano influencers amongst them. So I think, you know, part of writing my book was to sort of redefine how we view digital influence, because it's a lot broader. And although the media tends to focus on these types that many people have said, you know, they're quote unquote cringeworthy, is a word that many people have, you know, this anti-influencer sentiment that's out there, you miss the whole point and you miss out on really leveraging something that's really powerful. And once you get beyond that and you realize how broad digital influence can be and how there's many more people that you can collaborate with, you begin to see its power.
So, you know, before this call, we talked about, user generated content and used the word influencer generated content. You know, I've heard different other ways to describe it, produced, you know, user generated content or polished, you know, whatever term you want to use. But do you think it's important for brands to give up control of that messaging and allow the influencer to control the narrative? You know, one of the things that I've seen with TikTok in particular is that a lot of these influencers come up with such amazing creative campaigns that I never could have imagined that, you know, the brand necessarily would have come up with, because they're coming at it from a different angle. So, you know, where do you see the control and the narratives going of, should we give the influencer a lot of control? Should we give, you know, the brand more specific control and tell the influencer that they should only do X, Y, Z? You know, where do you see that trend going? And, you know, do you think it's good for brands to allow these influencers all this creative control?
You know, back in, I think it was 2013, Disneyland was a little bit late launching their Instagram channel, and they finally launched it. And they basically said, we cannot compete with the creativity and the authenticity of everybody who visits Disneyland, right? You can't. And so you have amazing diversity. And if you're a big enough brand where there's enough people talking about you, you can pick and choose that content that you want to represent your brand. So it's not like you're forced into something, but, you know, brands never really fully control the brand message, because it's all on how we as users perceive it, right? And with social media, you know, if we look at the share of voice, when we talk about a certain brand, more and more user-generated content is eating up a higher and higher percentage of that share of voice. So if you really want to influence it, I believe you should actually embrace it. And you bring about an important point where we're seeing now a new trend in influencer marketing, not just looking at influencers for mere amplification, but actually tapping into their content creation powers and leveraging their content on organic channels, you know, for our advertisements and even for our websites and our shopping cart, because this content performs better at the end of the day. It's more relatable. It's more real. It's more authentic. And when people see it, it's just, they resonate with it much differently. It's that trust factor that you don't see in a stock photo or one of these, you know, ads that look really fake. I mean, even today, you know, Ari, you would think we're in the second decade of social media. There are so many awesome examples of video creators out there. Yeah, I still see these big brands that create ads that just, they're just bad. I don't know what they're thinking. And maybe it's because they work with agencies on record who they have a relationship with, or maybe they think they're creative geniuses, but it doesn't, I don't know who it resonates with. And I think a lot of people feel the same thing, right? Whereas when you work with content creators with a proven track record, and you can see who they are in advance. You don't have to work with anyone and everyone, right? You can see their work. You can see their brand, their content, what they talk about. And you can pick and choose. You can hyper-target any community you want to by choosing the right influencer. So it's just so powerful. I'm just surprised more and more brands haven't tapped into it in a greater degree.
So from an incentive point of view, you know, one of the things that obviously is a big way to incentivize, you know, and I think we see this more on the nano and micro influencer side, is affiliate marketing, you know, these affiliate links. Do you think that is a good incentive for brands as well as the influencers? Do you think the best creative campaigns are done when there's affiliates, or do you think it's better when, you know, you're paying these influencers on a, you know, a dollar basis or other metrics that aren't linked to affiliate advertising?
So here's the thing. Affiliate marketing has been around. I mean, I think affiliate marketing is influencer marketing, and it's been around way before Instagram was developed. So these are things that obviously have always worked. But I take a step back and I say, look, you know, businesses have a lot to offer content creators and influencers. Yes, there's money. Yes, there might be commission. Yes, there's free product. Maybe there are, you know, inviting them to your headquarters. I mean, we have coronavirus right now, but, you know, putting together an exclusive trip for ambassadors, giving them introductions to other people. You know, I don't know, but there's, giving them a shout out, giving, posting a link to their YouTube profile from your brand ambassador page. There's a lot of things. So I think it comes down to that. On the one hand, businesses have a lot to offer. On the other hand, no two content creators or influencers are the same. Some love affiliate marketing. Some don't want to do it. Some would love money. Some just, they're so proud to work with you, or they're such a big fan that, you know, just a free product or just, you know, swag would be enough. So you don't know until you have a one-to-one conversation with each person. You can't just spam them all and say, we're going to send you a $25 Amazon gift card, to which some influencers may say, I'm offended that they wouldn't offer me that much, right? And then you lose the chance to work with them. So influencer marketing truly requires more of a PR approach, a one-to-one approach, to have that conversation to say, how can we collaborate? How do you normally work with brands? Do you do affiliate marketing? Awesome. We have a program. Oh, you don't do it? You just want product? Awesome. Oh, you know, you have an event and you're looking to, you're looking for a place to host your event in. Well, we actually have a place, or we have a partner that we can help you host your event, or, I don't know, whatever it is, right? That, you know, when you tap into what are the problems that each influencer has, what solutions are they looking for and how you can help them? That's why I think influencer marketing from a brand side is more of a sale. It's almost like a B2B sale. It's a solution sell, right? How can you help them? Because as a business, you can help them in many ways and look how to develop that relationship. So the answer to your question is it really does depend, because not everybody's into affiliate marketing, right? And it also depends on the influencer. Is this a side hustle? Are they full-time employee? Is it a passion project? I mean, you don't know until you actually have that conversation.
So, one of the things that I've seen on the paid social side is, we'll have companies, and I'll give you one particular, which I doubt you've seen, but there's a small startup called Marketer Hire.
And I have seen them. Yeah. Oh, I've seen this stuff on Instagram recently. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's really interesting, and I've only seen this on their Twitter paid social, is they're not doing ads for themselves. They're actually promoting other people that I assume are influencer marketers that are. So what they'll do is they'll take some, marketing expert, and they'll promote their tweet about Marketer Hire. Do you see that as a trend that's going to happen in paid social? And then to take it even a step further, do you see that as a trend that could even happen in linear, in that instead of an agency going and producing, the next big TV campaign, you actually have a David Dobrik or another big influencer do a, polished UGC type thing and use that on linear and other channels?
Yeah. So that trend we've actually been seeing for a while. Facebook and then Instagram offered you the ability to do a branded partnership. So an influencer says that they, they basically, it's like a timestamp or a link. They say they're basically working together with this business on this content, which then gives the business the ability to not only see the analytics of that post for their own reporting, but also to boost that post on their channels. So Twitter does not have that. So what they're doing is they're doing it natively. But absolutely, if I was to work with an influencer and they were going to talk up my product, I would want to boost that to my own audience. It makes total sense. So yes, I don't think we've seen a lot on Twitter because it doesn't have that platform that Facebook and Instagram have. But I would say that it's something. As far as it going, as far as linear, I'm just thinking if I'm the producer of a game and a big YouTube gamer does a great tutorial about how much fun they're having playing the game, I mean, right there, that's a great potential for an ad versus just these normal show video of the game, right? So I think we haven't seen it yet, but it wouldn't surprise me if we start seeing that in a not so distant future.
And that's what's so amazing about, polished user generated content, is the creative ideas that these influencers come up with are so ingenious. I mean, I'll see a TikTok post where someone's talking about dating and that someone broke up with them, and then it goes into a video game, and like, I wouldn't have even put the two together, but it flows so naturally. And I was like, oh my God, I was just served an ad and I loved it. And that's also what I find really interesting. A question for you that I have on this is, do you think a lot of these agencies, and obviously agencies have been under pressure for the past 10, 20 years, but do you think they're even under more pressure now, in that a company will go, why will I pay you to produce content you know, why don't I just go to a David Dobrik or, you know, someone 1/10 the 1/100th the size of him and do polished, you know, UGC? Do you see that as a trend? And do you think, you know, these brands should eschew these agencies and just go direct to influencers to have them produce the content?
Yeah. I mean, there are some fantastic agencies out there that in their own way tap into the creativity of their employees, right? That might be able to, or indeed do compete with a lot of content creators out there. But for those that don't, then yes, they're going to be under pressure. And we have seen more and more companies over time, just looking at influencer marketing specifically, more and more of them taking it in-house, more and more of hiring influencers to be part of their content team. And yes, I mean, I preach in the age of influence, go out there and build your own program directly with influencers. There's no reason to have a middleman. Now, if you feel like you don't have the resources to do that, that's where you could obviously tap into an agency to help you. And I work with, you know, I have a small business client. They don't have the resources to do the outreach and to manage all those relationships. So for them, you know, that's where the agency is always going to make sense, right? That you don't have the resources, let's just outsource it. So there's always going to be a need for them. But, you know, more and more businesses, as they realize how strategic it is to work with influencers, not just for organic social media, but just for content, because so much investment goes into content, especially when you get visual and video, right? Yes, it makes sense to build their own team of influencers and work directly with them. But agencies, there's always going to be a role, but they definitely have to up their game here. They have to better, you know, leverage influencers themselves and really be able to compete with influencers in some way in terms of how they create content.
And you talked about starting an influencer, you know, marketing campaign. When does it make sense to A, start one, and B, to do it in-house first, you know, outsource it, right? And to, you know, I know that's a really broad question, so let's just, you know, I'll give you a specific example of, you know, I'm a direct-to-consumer fashion brand or something, and, you know, I'm trying to scale my product up, and like say I have 20 employees, you know, is that something where, okay, I'm going to, you know, have the head of marketing do this, or I'm going to go out to an agency, you know, like where does that, you know, sort of transition occur from let's do it to let's do it in-house versus let's outsource it?
Well, first of all, you should be doing it. So, you know, if you're in fashion, how are you going to promote what you do? So you have a website, right? You're probably, hopefully your fashion may be featured on other e-commerce sites. So maybe you have these B2B partnerships in terms of distribution. Maybe you can buy it in the Amazon marketplace, eBay, I don't know, right? Wherever it might be. Then you obviously have SEO, which, you know, is more important for some industries than others. Pay-per-click, you know, when we talk about search engines. You have email. I have a client that's B2C. They are in the hair fashion industry. And email has been extremely lucrative for them. So, and you own it when you own someone's email address, obviously. So you have your email marketing automation. And then you have sort of content, you know, content marketing. I think for fashion, it might be a lot of education around fashion trends, or I don't know what type of fashion, who's that target audience, but there might be a role that it has there. And then you have social media. And, you know, as we were saying, organic social media becomes so hard to get virality on. It becomes paid. And then you have influencers. So I would want to be doing all these things and really comparing and contrasting how they're performing. And for the influencers, I would want that to be my content engine, right? I think that's because you're going to be paying for the content. Anytime you do a photo shoot or a video shoot, you're paying for it anyway. Why not find influencers that really speak to your customer? So then, okay, well, where are these influencers? And I'd number one, look in my user base, right? There's more and more technology that will go into your shopping cart history, go into your email database, and go into your Instagram followers and tell you who are already the nano micro influencers that have brand affinity with you. And that's absolutely where I'd start. I'd look for people that already posted photos with my fashion. And I'd say, hey, we're launching a program, you know, brand ambassador program, whatever you want to call it. You know, we'd love for you to be part of it. And really go from there. So if you have a loyalty program, like you should, I mean, that's, you'd want them to be part of that loyalty program. You'd want to create a, you know, the highest tier for them, but you'd want to figure out other ways to utilize them, because guess what? Yes, they can help amplify. Yes, they can create content. They can also be really invaluable in understanding the trends, in providing user feedback, community feedback, right? I almost consider them sort of like this VIP committee of people. And I would want to, you know, see how they perform, see how their content performs. If you were to pay them to promote something, how that performs. And over time, it's going to be the 80-20 rule. You're going to find 20% generate 80% of the results. And then from there, I'd constantly bring in new influencers and maybe stop working as much with influencers that underperform for whatever reason, and optimize over time and compare how that does with our email marketing, with our pay-per-click, with our paid social. And it's like you're an audio engineer with different levels. You know, do I need more guitar, less guitar, more drums, and really go from there. And I think what you'll see is you'll be increasing that budget into that influencer program more and more as you see the value it brings. So hopefully that gives you, I know it's still very conceptual, but that is absolutely the way that I would be managing it.
Well, Neil, thanks so much for joining me. Really appreciate it. You know, as we wrap things up, where can people find you on social? Where can they buy your book? And by the way, everyone, when he mentions the links, I'll make sure to put it on iTunes and make sure to put it on YouTube. But just so people are listening if they want to write it down.
Hey, thanks, Ari. So I try to keep it simple. My name is Neil Schaefer. So it's the real Neil. And then it's Schaefer. Thank Ellis Island for all the various spellings. But mine is S-C-H-A-F-F-E-R. So I'm neilschaefer.com. I'm Neil Schaefer everywhere in social. The name of my book is The Age of Influence, which you can find on Amazon and everywhere else. And I also have a podcast if you're interested in learning more about this digital concept of influence, or the concept of digital influence. It's called the Maximize Your Social Influence Podcast.
Great. Well, Neil, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. Really appreciate your time. You know, big, big fan of your work and your social and stuff. Well, until next time, everyone, I'll see you then.
Thank you, Ari.